Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Real Perspective, the podcast based on a YouTube channel based on a podcast. As always, I'm your co-host, MJ Smith.
And I'm Michael Morey, and we have a special guest here today. I'll let him introduce himself, but just to give you a little bit of background, I went to the first year of law school with him before he went to bigger and better things for other law schools. And he also is an attorney and also the co-host of the Anselm Society's Believe to See podcast, which I will also ask him to go and describe. So if you would please introduce yourself, Matt.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me on. As you said, we have a lot in common. We went to law school together. We're both lawyers and we're both podcast hosts. My podcast is called Believe to See. It is a podcast of the Anselm Society, and we are dedicated to a renaissance of the Christian imagination. That's all. I am very excited to be here.
Thanks for coming.
Matt, where can we find the Anselm Society? We'll do this again at the end, but I like to get for guests up top where they can find.
Absolutely. So you can find us at anselmsociety.org, and obviously you can find Believe to See wherever you get fine podcasts.
Great. And then any social media presence for that?
Yes, you can find us on Instagram. We're on Facebook. You can follow my author website if you want to, too, MatthewMelama.com. So I'll have updates on all that stuff, too.
Great. Yeah, and just for some background, I've been on Matt's podcast twice now, both involving Star Wars. The first one was about kind of the creative process, I'd want to say. We were talking a little bit about George Lucas and collaboration mostly, but then that was on the eve of, what was it, The Rise of Skywalker releasing, Matt?
So that was, I think I listened to your podcast, Mike, and you were, you had some takes on you had some pretty hot takes on the later trilogy, so we just wanted you to scorch the earth with your takes, and you did.
Season
one out by the time Rise of Skywalker came out? I don't remember.
I'm trying to think. The Mandalorian?
Yeah,
season
one at least.
Yeah, season one would release like right after Rise of Skywalker, okay. Or right around that time. No, right before it, actually, you're right. And then I came back for another episode on The Mandalorian involving like Westerns, right? Was that what it was, Matt?
Yeah, so we talked about Mandalorian. You know, we thought we'd talk about a Star Wars thing we actually enjoy. So that, and especially the way that like Western and like samurai movie motifs helped make it good. So it was a super fun episode.
Yeah,
if I do say so myself.
I agree with you. And but just to go and take a bigger picture look, your podcast kind of deals with the intersection of faith and the arts. And it's kind of a little bit of what we go for here, too. That's why we have the perspective part of our title is we kind of involve our own perspectives, which involves our Christian faith as well as other aspects of ourselves, which might sometimes be outside the mainstream of normal art criticism. And we're back for this episode of Real Perspective to go and talk about another Star Wars themed piece of media, which I felt was relevant to bringing Matt on board. And that is the Book of Boba Fett, which came out back in December of last year, 2021. And now we are a couple months out from it being concluded. It's been several months since MJ and I have both seen it, but I think, Matt, you saw it more recently. Is that right?
Yeah, I was actually glad you asked me to be on your show to talk about, because when you messaged me, I was a couple episodes in, and honestly, it was kind of the dreary first couple episodes, so I don't know if I would have pushed myself through without your invite, and I'm glad I pushed through, because it takes a while to get away from Tatooine.
And that's for sure. And we're going to touch on that, because the show is extremely inconsistent, in my opinion. But as just kind of a bigger overview, and we don't need to get into, like, you know, where were you when, like, you know, you first saw Star Wars or all that kind of stuff. You know, we kind of exhausted that conversation over many podcasts, MJ, so we probably don't need to do that again. But where do you stand currently on, like, Disney's management of the series and maybe, like, these live-action attempts as a whole?
Yeah, so I feel like I was a kid when the prequels came out. You know, I was like 10 years old when Phantom Menace comes out. So I liked it because I was, you know, 10, didn't know better. And I was like 14 when Attack of the Clones came out and I was in love with Natalie Portman. And I didn't know any better. But then later on, I look back, it's like, oh, those were so awful. And I just viscerally hate them so irrationally that for a while I was kind of into the Disney thing. I was like, well, at least it's a non-George Lucas making it. How bad can it be? I lost most of my faith after Rise of Skywalker happened.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed The Mandalorian. Loved first season one. I enjoyed big parts of season two. And you know, I was actually really looking forward to Book of Boba Fett when it came out. We can talk about the future now that there's like another Obi-Wan series or whatever, but I guess I enjoy the TV so far. I'm just a salty, grumpy old man with all the sequels now, but you know, such is life.
Right. And so, you know, you are actually maybe more representative of probably what, I don't want to say like the mainstream, but like what your average critic thinks, which is that the prequels are bad. MJ and I are kind of defenders of them. but we don't need to get into that. But we don't need to get into that. We'll just kind of go and zero in on Book of Boba, which is another joint that is primarily driven by Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, who did the Mandalorian series. Dave Filoni being one of the people who did like the CG show Clone Wars, and Dave Favreau of Iron Man fame. Jon Favreau of Iron Man fame. And this, you could basically call it a spinoff of The Mandalorian. Mandalorian basically revived this character of Boba Fett. If you don't know who Boba Fett is, then you're probably not listening to this podcast at this point. But the last season of The Mandalorian dealt with Boba Fett kind of coming back from the dead, and then kind of closed with a tease of him taking over Jabba's domain by killing Bib Fortuna, and then ended with a hint of, or a promise of, the Book of Boba coming out a year from that point. And so here we are, a year now, maybe a year and a half removed from that moment. And we had an entire series, 7 episodes devoted to Boba Fett taking over Jabba the Hutt's territory. We have a couple episodes that are directed by Robert Rodriguez. He had the first episode, like the third, and then the very last.
He directed the episode that Boba Fett came back in season 2 of Mandalorian.
That's right. Yes. And then he was kind of asked to go and be the showrunner of and a producer for this series. So he has a pretty heavy handprint, I would say, in this show. But all the episodes, except for one, which was the Dave Filoni episode, were written by Jon Favreau. So it's kind of a Mandalorian joint still, but there's also a touch of Robert Rodriguez, and then also the pandemic. Disney Plus shareholder. Other things at play in this series that make it slightly different.
More than a touch on that.
I was going to start with our guest. Matt, what did you think of the Book of Boba as a whole?
That is the tricky part, looking at it as a whole, because there were some parts of it I really, really liked, you know? Like, I mean, I'm not going to go too intellectual here. When Boba Fett starts riding a friggin' Rancor, I'm like, all right, strap me in. I'm all in on this. They're like, you know, they bring in the Mandalorian. I thought that was great. But then they're with the Sand People for so friggin' long, nothing happens. They kind of drop the storyline. There's long parts of it that you feel like they don't need, or that drag. In trying to view it all as a whole, I don't know. Can't decide if it's a bad series with some good parts or a good series with some flaws. So, yeah, I can talk a lot about the details, but the whole I'm still trying to figure out.
Yeah, and in fact, I kind of feel like that's what maybe we're all feeling in different ways. Maybe this conversation will be a way to piece that together. MJ, what did you think of it as a whole, or as individual parts that were both good and bad?
You know, there are several quotes coming to mind. One is Marshawn Lynch during Super Bowl week: "I'm just here so I don't get fined." I don't have a lot of thoughts about it because it's kind of a nothing show to me. Also, very much the Don Draper meme where the guy's like, he's like, this guy in an elevator tells him, like, you just live such a sad life to me. And Don Draper tells him, I don't think about you at all. And that's kind of also how I feel about Boba Fett. It's, I mean, legitimately the only reason I finished it. So I watched it. I watched the first episode the day it came out. And I was like, I am not finishing this. And then Mike was like, hey, I'd like to do an episode on Boba Fett. And I was like, that's the only, those, this, the magic words to get me to finish the show. And that's legit the only reason I finished the show. And I do think the last three episodes are the strongest of the series.
Mm-hmm.
But I would never have found that out otherwise. Like I'm such a bad TV watcher in general. That if something doesn't hook me from the outset, I'm not finishing it unless it's for a podcast. So like even the, you know, and this is obviously a separate thing. I don't really want to talk about the Marvel shows, but like, you know, they're doing the Marvel shows on Disney Plus too. I finished WandaVision because I actually really liked it until the end. I finished Loki and I thought that was pretty solid. And then I finished What If, and I thought that was pretty solid. But that was easier to get behind because it was like contained stories until the last two episodes. So it was like something different was always happening. I don't even remember the name of it. Falcon and Winter Soldier. I watched one episode and was out. Like I was like, oh, this is not, no. And like read all the spoilers eventually and was like, yeah, made the right decision there. And that's honestly probably how I would have treated Boba Fett. Had it not been for recording this. So on the whole, I lean more towards it's a bad show with some good parts, specifically the parts that are not really about Boba Fett.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. And that's something that like crossed my mind because, you know, it's the same thing as you. I feel like I'm kind of slogging through Tatooine trying to like get out of there. But then Mando comes back and he takes out the Darksaber. You're like, all right, that's really cool. Yep. It's like, oh, the show's good. But then it hits me like, oh, so Boba Fett, the show, gets good once it becomes the Mandalorian again. That can't be a good thing for Boba Fett.
Yeah, and I mean, arguably, that is the best episode of the series, and it has zero Boba Fett in it. And in fact, it only has like 2 seconds of any relevant plot line to the Boba Fett story when Fennec shows up to go and hire Mando at the end.
At the very end.
Yeah, and so we can definitely break that down. And just to give my own thoughts, I mean, I echo both of you, which is that I think it's a mess. I think you can see that essentially they could not go and cobble together a Mandalorian season 3 in time, so they made this as a stopgap, is my take on all this. I mean, that's kind of my conspiracy theory, is that they knew they'd have like a lot of social distancing restrictions and maybe there were contracts that needed to be dealt with. Because I kind of get the sense that people were only contracted to do 2 seasons of Mando, and they had to go and then like renegotiate some stuff afterwards. And so this show kind of arrives as a result of a bunch of compromises where they couldn't quite get a Mando season 3 going, so they kind of slid in maybe like a pilot episode script or ideas or whatever, use it as a backdoor for what some ideas they want to do in season 3, but they made this compromise show. And I can back that up with the idea that apparently Ming-Na Wen, when she was signing her contract to go and do this, she signed it as Mandalorian season 3. And when they were given scripts for this show, it was like Mando 301, you know, 3 being season 3 and then 01 being episode 1 or whatever. So most of the cast and crew were under the impression that they were doing Mandalorian related things. And so I think that the Mandalorian is basically casting a giant shadow over this show. It's basically Star Wars : The Mandalorian : The Book of Boba Fett.
That's a good way to put it.
And maybe if you had inserted that in there, I think some people's impressions would have been set more accordingly in some ways. But because of that, we're living in the world where this was referred to and marketed as the Book of Boba Fett. And Boba is, I'd say by the end of this, shown to be not a very compelling character on his own. He needs other people to bounce off of, and the supporting cast in this is not particularly great until Mando shows up. So I overall thought that the first four episodes, they had some inconsistent qualities. I mean, we could probably go by an episode by episode basis, but the gist of it is that I liked the Lawrence of Arabia ripoff episode where they attack the train. And then I kind of liked the episode. Yeah. Two. Episode yeah. two. And then I think the fourth one was okay. And that one was like them sneaking the Jabba's palace and that kind of the end of the flashbacks at long last.
Yeah.
And then the Mandal storyline and then the ending, kind of the last stuff. And that stuff was the strongest. But let's just kind of break down, maybe first of all, Matt, what do you think about Boba Fett as a character? MJ and I have shared probably our thoughts on Boba as a character several times by now, but do you like Boba conceptually or what?
I love Boba as a character. Just, I'm thinking back to when I'm a kid and I'm discovering Star Wars for the first time, and for whatever reason, because when you look back at the original Star Wars trilogy, Boba's not a very important character.
No.
But for whatever reason, so much lore grew up around him so quickly. I remember having conversations, I'm like, 10 or 11 with my nerd friends, being like, oh, guys, did you hear? Boba Fett survived the Sarlacc pit. He, he took his little bomb and did whatever. And then he just climbed up the teeth. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. And then there's, I think in a lot of the other, extra canonical stuff, there he does some cool stuff. So for whatever reason, and it doesn't make sense based on just the trilogy, right, Boba has a lot of cachet. I remember in Mandalorian season 2, when Boba Fett shows up, this little youthful part of my soul just like, yes, he's here and he's kicking butt and it's great. So I went in primed to really enjoy the Book of Boba Fett, mm-hmm, just because of all the background.
Yeah. And I'm glad you went and brought that up because I thought the Mando episodes featuring Boba were fantastic. I mean, they were good episodes as they were anyway, but they made Boba, to me, legitimately cool because I'd always been kind of ambivalent. I thought he was a jobber. MJ, I'm pretty sure that you thought the same thing of him, right?
I always thought that, there's so much potential in Boba Fett. There's, mm-hmm, because he cuts such a cool silhouette. That armor is so dope looking that, and I think that's why fans kind of, glommed onto him and wanted, right, more from him. But yeah, he's a nothing character. He doesn't do anything in the original trilogy, and he actually kind of sucks. He's really bad at his job, if you think about it. But there's always this potential of I would like to know more about this character because he's so mysterious and interesting looking, and we never see his face. And then, even I think if you're even the slightest bit kind of nerdy about Star Wars, you get what the EU, some of the EU lore out of that about about Mandalorians and Mandalore and the whole not never taking their armor off thing. Yep. So that makes you think about Boba Fett until Mandalorian happens. Right. So
right,
Boba Fett's the most famous Mandalorian until Mandalorian season 1 happens. So right, when you're thinking about that character, you're always oh, I really do want to know more about him and how he fit into the Mandalore society and this tradition of bounty hunters and this religious fanaticism around kind of war and battle and violence. So you want him to be the Mandalorian essentially that we get in the Mandalorian. And then
right,
we got the Mandalorian and it did all the same stuff we wanted with Boba Fett.
Yeah.
With, is his name Jin?
Right? Yeah. Din.
Dingerin. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
What a dumb name. It's not good. So it does all the stuff we wanted with Boba Fett with Din. So by the time we get to Boba Fett, most of our questions about Boba Fett have been answered with Din. So
yeah,
it's why are you here?
Yeah. I'd say that, basically, if you ask me, I kind of think that Mandalorian was conceived of as a Boba Fett show originally. And I think it makes sense if you think about it from the standpoint, if there is, because they tried to go and make movies featuring Boba Fett a couple of times and they fell apart. There was rumors that Josh Trank, who did Fantastic Four or Fantastic Four Stick, as people describe it as, that he was involved in an attempt, and then he had Fantastic Four came out and that kicked him off the show. And then there's also, the guy who did Logan, what's his name, the director?
James Mangold.
Yeah, he was also, I think, at one point attached to go and do a Boba Fett movie.
I would like to see that.
Yeah, I think that would have been kind of cool.
Yeah, what was the, because George Lucas had originally looked into making his own Star Wars TV show, like, well before the age of streaming. Was that going to be focused on Boba Fett as well?
I think it was going to have, it was called Star Wars Underworld, so it was going to deal with elements of the Underworld, and I think that there would have been some Boba Fett episodes in there as well, probably. But I can see somebody like John Favreau, I keep on doing that, talking to somebody at Disney or Kathleen Kennedy being like, hey, I want to make a show about Boba Fett. And then here's the twist. He has to go and guard a young Jedi. And, you know, he kind of like doesn't like Jedi because of Luke. And then also, if you want to count the prequels, because Mace Windu killed his dad, you know, and then somebody be like, wow, that's really intriguing. But like Boba Fett's got all this baggage and he kind of like died lamely and all that stuff. Like, it might be off-putting to an audience. Like, let's make him a new character and have all the kind of good qualities we associate with Boba, but without all the baggage. And so that's, to me, what I think Mandalorian started off as was that. And so when you go and get to this show, then you have kind of basically rendered this character of Boba redundant because most of whatever interesting qualities about him were subsumed by some other character. And so then what's left with this? Well, I would think based off of the title, something called Boba, the Book of Boba Fett would actually be like chronicling different parts of his life. But instead, what the Book of Boba Fett is referring to is, I don't know. I'm not really sure. Like, why is it called the Book of Boba Fett?
Well, I think it has something to do with like keeping the brain. I don't know, because Mandalorian is set up as chapters, right? Like every episode is like chapter one, chapter two, even up through like chapter 16 at the end of season two. So like they're obviously trying to do a book, but it's not called the Book of Mandalorian either. It is kind of jarring.
Yeah. And to me, my biggest problem with it is, as a character study of Boba Fett, I really don't understand what makes him tick any better by the end of this series than kind of how it started. Other than just the base, like, he learned from the Tuskens to kind of work with people, I guess. Is that the theme? Matt, can you, like, guide me through, like, what you think? Like, what was the character study of Book of Boba?
Did the microphone pick up my deep sigh? I hope it did. That, I was thinking, because when I saw, you know, the preview for the Book of Boba, I was picturing like, it's going to be like chronicles of this dude's like awesome life as a bounty hunter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then, like you guys said, they can't do that because that's what the Mandalorian was. He's a dude in a dope suit of Mandalorian armor who goes and, you know, gets bounties. So they can't really do that. But then Boba's just sort of sitting around in Jabba's empty palace the whole time. Yep. And his motivation, I could not figure out why he was doing what he was doing. I know they tried to shoehorn in like, oh, the Tuskens taught him so much, but I couldn't really figure out what that was or why he's staying around, because he's basically like a mob boss, but he's a mob boss who cares for the people for some reason. And it basically seems like he's sitting in this big empty building and then people come to him for no real reason. And I just felt like just kept wanting to get things going, and it just took so long for that to happen. And it didn't happen until essentially the show became The Mandalorian Season 3.
Right.
I actually have a theory about that. I'm glad you brought that up, Matt, because so obviously the samurai western, like, lone gunman thing is taken up by Mandalorian. So if you're going to do Book of Boba Fett, you have to make it different somehow. Right. And I actually, on paper, like the idea, which is mob stuff, right?
The Godfather with
gangster,
Boba Fett.
Yeah. Or like Scorsese movies. Like, you can tell, like, when he goes to, the second episode when he goes to the casino for the first time, or
The bar or whatever.
The bar. Maybe that is in the first episode.
That's in the first episode and the second episode and the third episode and the fourth episode, because the repetitive structure of this show
Like when they're going to the Copacabana in Goodfellas, but the problem is, because it's Disney, and not that I need like swears and blood, like a Scorsese movie in my Star Wars necessarily. The problem is Scorsese protagonists are deeply charming, deeply unlikable people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can't do that on Disney Plus. You just can't. And so because like he has to be this gangster with a heart of gold, like annoying more than anything, because he can't like fully be a piece of crap gangster, but he can't fully be like this superhero, like savior of the downtrodden of Tatooine. So it just gets muddled, and it's like I would much rather watch, you know, the Henry Hill, or even like, I'm gonna say this is a mob movie even though it's about Wall Street, the Jordan Belfort of Tatooine mm-hmm. than like this weird yeah. we're gonna like try to have our cake and eat it too version of him that we're shoehorning Boba Fett into. Also, yeah. Boba mm-hmm. Fett kind of is a shitty guy.
Yeah.
like he's not he's working for the Empire. Like he's right. you know, like he's not really that neutral. He has taken a side. Even like I mean, I guess you could say like he's going wherever the money is. But like
mm-hmm. that's not
a good person
stance.
Wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
so like there's precedent for him to be like kind of bad, like kind of a bad, unlikable yeah. guy. Disney's not going to do that. And so because yeah, it's like the Disney version of Goodfellas and Casino and stuff, it's not a good version of any of those influences. Whereas you can get away more with the lone gunman, samurai, Ronin stuff with Mando a lot right. easier in the like family friendly Disney ecosystem.
Yeah. They sanded down all the rough edges around this yeah. character and you don't really understand how he got from point A to point B. And you know, it's canonically, the last time we saw him, he was working for a vile gangster in Jabba the Hutt, and it was out without any remorse. And then he spends a couple years with the Tuskens, and then I guess he's like, oh, I don't like working for idiots anymore. So that's what he says. Like, I'm working for idiots.
Yeah.
And then he decides to become the head idiot. Like, it doesn't really make a lot of sense because he's a total moron, by the way. He's a really bad mob boss in this show.
Yeah,
guys.
Well, and he's just, but there's no like there's no setup that he craves this power. Like,
yeah,
like
yeah.
I really. There is such a precedent too for him to be so bitter and like feel like this motivation of like I need what's owed to me
mm-hmm.
By Jabba. I need what's owed to me by this bad stroke of luck I had in the Sarlacc pit. Like if he came out yeah. totally like bitter and angry and then goes on this journey over the course of the show of being this kind of like unlikable dude to remembering how he was treated by the Tuskens,
mm-hmm.
then it would be better.
Yeah, no, you're setting up a compelling, what we call an arc. and that's like what gets me back to this idea of, you know, I would have thought conceptually you have like a Book of Boba type show. It's dealing with like high points and low points in his life. So it's like his tenure in the Empire, his tenure under Jabba. And like each of those like flashbacks, if you're gonna have a flashback structure, ties into then the modern day episode or the present day part of it, which is it's like informing his decision today. Maybe it's like, you know, some crappy thing that happened to him back then, and then it's informing him now and how he's like gonna change his life in some way. And you know, even if you wanna go with the PG gangster stuff, which I'm gonna get to in a second, like at the very least, he's like trying to go and show a better way of being a gangster in comparison to something in his past, but we don't get that connection, that through line of between those past segments and modern day segments. And just to kind of go off of what you were saying before, NJ, so this is going to sound, I mean, this is going to be something that none of the audience gets, but occasionally I watch a soap opera called General Hospital with my mom. and there's like a gangster on that soap opera. His name is Sonny, right? And he's like the most G-rated gangster on the show because he like owns like this business, but then they never define what that business is because they still want him to be like a good guy. He's like the good guy mobster, and other bad guy mobsters come onto the show and they kill people or whatever. But then they threaten to go and bring in drugs. And he's like, I don't want to have drugs in my territory. And it's like, by the end of the after watching this for years, I'm like, okay, what does he actually do that's bad then? like what is he a mobster about? Like what is actually the illegal activity he's doing? And that's why I felt like this happened in the in the Book of Boba Fett, where he's like, I don't want any spice going through this territory. But it's like, okay, well, what exactly are you being the crime lord of then? Because crime, like,
a
lords
crime
have
lord
to do with
goodness.
Criminals. Like, I don't understand. And like that all just like casts a shadow over this. And you know, the obvious answer is they need to find a way to differentiate themselves from the Mandalorian. So they went down this crime boss path, but then they also don't want to alienate young kids for watching Disney Plus, but they also like can't go and make it too kiddie because then they alienate other people. And it's just like at crossroads completely with making any sort of compelling character arc. So anyway, that's
so
my rant.
Tonally confused. And
yes.
Like, yeah. I think that's a larger problem with Disney Plus. I don't really necessarily want to talk about this,
yeah.
but it's so weird to me. Like, have you guys ever seen, I don't know. So the co-host of my other podcast is based in the UK, and the stuff that is on Disney Plus in the UK is absolutely bananas to me.
Really?
Yeah, like Nightmare Alley is on Disney Plus.
Oh yeah, because like they can easily like combine their Hulu output and their Disney Plus outlet.
Yeah, so like this movie Fresh, right? That's like, it's on Hulu, it stars Sebastian Stan, and it's this like horror movie about a cannibal, and it's sort of like this allegory for like the patriarchy and feminism, is just on Disney Plus. It's like, yeah. You can just watch it on Disney Plus in the UK. And that's like very funny to me. And Disney Plus here has like, they don't have that because they have Hulu, but they also like put all the Netflix Marvel shows on Disney Plus here. And now like when you log into Disney Plus, they like, I had to watch something for Joss for a minute. Oh, Playing with Sharks, which is a National Geographic documentary about the people who shot the real shark footage in Jaws. But when I logged in to watch that, I had to go and adjust my content rating for my account. So it said that I was like up to TV 14, but you can go in and update yourself to like R-rated content or TVMA content now. So they are putting that stuff on Disney Plus. But in the UK, it's this separate thing called Disney Plus Star, and that's where like all the Fox content goes. And here, I think it's just on regular Disney Plus.
Yeah, and I think that you're touching on something that basically this show is just content. That's it. Like, it is just a product to go and keep people subscribed another couple months on Disney Plus. Because there's no real compelling creative reason, obviously, judging by the final product, for it to exist. And maybe we can go a little bit further into that at the end of the episode when we kind of talk about like what the future of these shows and Star Wars entails. But let me just go and kind of ask a general question. Matt, like, what did you like about this show?
Yeah, so when I approach these shows, you know, I think everyone does this. Different types of entertainment or like art that you enjoy in different ways. You know, like sometimes I'll want to read a book of serious literature because I want to, you know, grow as a person. Sometimes I just want to read something for fun. Star Wars definitely goes to me in the, I just want to have fun. You know, I just want to watch something that's cool. And, you know, that's well made, has a decent story arc. So that is what I'm looking for here. So I should be very easy to please by that regard. You know, like when I was given my top of the list rundown, one of my biggest plus points was Boba Fett riding a Rancor. So I shouldn't be that hard to please. But like you said, it seemed like there was a lot of tonality problems here. Like they almost tried to sweep in so many people that they end up not sweeping anybody in. So that seemed to be one of the overarching things where they try to do like the, you know, Dances with Wolves knockoff in the first, you know, four episodes. And it's like Mandalorian season three for a while, and it's like G-rated mob boss. So it's like all these things that they kind of do, but none of it is done well. And that sort of leaves even those like me who are coming in just to have fun pretty unsatisfied with a lot of it.
Yeah, I think that there's a serious problem in terms of a lot of the characters they introduce, they don't even give names to. But none of the Tusken people obviously have names, and they're all speaking this garbled language anyway on top of it. So a little more like unrelatable. But then the biker squad that gets introduced, or the scooter squad. We could get into that.
The Squirtle squad?
The mod squad, right?
The mod squad. like, none of those people are given names that are really identifiable in the show. I think they might throw out like once or twice, like Vash is like their girl's name or something like that. But they don't like ever get like a real proper introduction of, hi, my name is so and so. They're just introduced as a bunch of hooligans, and then they're like, and then Boba's like, hey, join my team, and they're like, okay, and that's super surface level. And even in that episode, you could have had a moment, because there's a moment later, and it's in the third episode that they show up, and it's arguably the worst episode of the season. Like there's a part in that episode where Boba and Fennec, his number two, are eating right over the course of a dinner and have like a big feast and talking about like what their next move is and all that kind of stuff. You could have had the biker squad eating with them and then have like a little bit of discussion, like as a mob family, I guess, that they're becoming, about their wants and their needs and like what they desire and how Boba's going to give it to them, or he sees something of himself in them being scrappy people and he goes and thinks back to like the prequels or when he was a kid or something like that. And which is the reason why I kind of thought they were kept on flashing back to Kamino in episode 2 stuff, was that they were going to tie in his backstory to them in some way. But no, they don't do any of that. And it's kind of show up in a part where the evil Wookiee tries to kill them. And then they help out with the worst filmed car chase ever at the end of the episode.
Great.
It was real rough. I almost dropped the series right then and there. And they never get fleshed out. And then by the end of the seventh episode, the Vash, the girl character, is saying stuff about how I'm not going to leave my home and all this. And then Boba gets convinced by her. But I don't understand. Okay, what is her relationship to this home? Like, she was kind of a delinquent who didn't like her home, it felt like, before. And Boba has no real connection to this place or connection to her to go and then be like, oh, yeah, well, you know what? You're right. I'm going to stay here and defend this home. Like, they just skipped a whole bunch of steps between him connecting with people. And a lot of this comes down to, we never got to know any of them.
Yeah, to me, you guys have probably talked about this at some point, but I remember when I finally found out the core thing that was wrong with the Hobbit trilogy, when I found out that originally Guillermo del Toro was going to make 2 Hobbit movies, and they would have been good, but then the studio kicks them out, and they expand 2 into 3, and it was like, oh, all the pieces fit together. That's why it's so bloated. That's why it's so blah, 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 blah. I feel like in the coming months, we're going to get something similar with Boba. Like, something was wrong. I think y'all threw out, the pandemic. This kind of turned into a stopgap for Mando Season 3. Maybe that's it. Because it feels like something was going on beneath the surface. If they had more time, this mod squad would have had, you know, backstories, character arcs. You feel like you know what they want. They're not just, like, some punk kids who have, like, cool, like, robot eyes. But as it is, it kind of feels like it almost seems like a producer's note where, like, all right, Boba needs like some cool sidekicks to shoot stuff. And it just seems so thrown in there. And there has to be some weird backdoor reason why.
There's I don't keep up with a lot of the Star Wars stuff, like leaks and accounts and stuff like that. I don't care enough about Star Wars to really do that, but there was a guy on Twitter who kind of became the main character for a little bit the other day, who I guess, I don't know, I don't really care about this, but like, I guess Disney started selling, Disneyland, like the parks, started selling the Rey lightsaber as a Force FX lightsaber for $200, like how much all of them cost. And this guy like who like didn't like the Disney trilogy, and that's his whole like persona on Twitter.
Right. There's a lot of people who are like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, they just like, they're like, this is my entire online identity. I just yell about Star Wars now. And so he was like, wow, I really hope that all the people who are buying the Rey Force FX lightsaber know that it was only put in the movie to get you to buy it. And it was like, well, that's most of Star Wars. Like, that's a lot. Wait till you learn about everything else in Star Wars, basically ever. and like, I feel like that's what these characters feel like. Like, it just feels like something for the kids. But like, it's a very how do you do, fellow kids situation. Where like, and then it turned out because like, they're just lame all the way around. Like, it was like that Fallout meme where it's like everyone disliked that. Like, no one liked those characters. It didn't work for kids because it was like an old person's idea of what kids like. And it didn't work for adults because it was an old person's idea of what kids like.
Can I make a quick shout out to what's the name of the like lady in the mod squad? What you said it was like Vash or something.
Oh yeah, you know, it's Drash.
A good character, but whoever that actress is, you could tell she's like, I'm friggin' going for it. Like every single line she says, it's like the final soliloquy of like Macbeth. It's like, there is no labor for us, mighty daimyo. What will you have us do? And she like sheds like, okay, that's not good, but hey, you're going for it. I respect.
Yeah, you committed.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. She's like on some other show, it was like Yellow Jackets or something like that. And I don't, she might have been nominated for an Emmy. Like, she's a pretty good actress. Yeah.
Hey, if you're on Star Wars, I say you freaking go for it, even if you know your character's no good. So props to her.
Like, but this, I'm sure this, she thought this is like her big break, other than she's already got some critical acclaim somewhere else. But this gets you a lot more exposure, obviously. Yeah. But then they give her absolutely nothing to work with. And they do that for like consistently all these other characters. they go and this is not anywhere incomparable, but you know, they go and have this badass looking Wookiee that shows up in the second episode. Dude. And then he just amounts to totally nothing.
He was my favorite character of the show. I really liked
really?
Him. Yeah, I thought he was so cool looking.
And yeah, he was really cool looking.
He didn't do much, but I didn't care because I just liked looking at that character. I thought it was such a dope design.
Yeah, he looked really cool. But then he's like so incompetent in how he like tries to go about killing Boba, which I mean, gets me on another subject, which is most every single one of these Robert Rodriguez episodes is directed very poorly and choreographed poorly. Like that assassination attempt was horrible. That, you know, the car chase in Mos Espa was horrible. Like the tactics that they used in the seventh episode was horrible. It looked okay, but it was just like, why are they like shooting out in the open and exposing themselves and all kinds of bad stuff? But they just let down and did dirty so many characters, not just Boba Fett, until you get to the Mando episodes. And then, like, it actually did him kind of justice.
Yeah.
But it was just a wasted opportunity. And I agree with you, Matt. I feel like those young kids are a producer's note in the sense of somebody realized along the line, a couple episodes into writing this, oh, yeah, we have, like, this entire show centered around 250-plus-year-olds in the form of Boba and Fennec, and we need to have kids, like, or younger people so we can throw them into, like, trailer shots. Because they showed that the Drash chick a lot in, like, some TV spots. I saw a bunch of her.
Mm.
And so there was obviously, like, casting these people so they could kind of throw them in eye-catching, you know, shots for a trailer, an ad, or something. But otherwise, they were giving nothing to work with.
And Matt, I want to bring up something to your point too, that this person was like, I'm in Star Wars, I'm going to go for it. I don't think anyone, like, there are bad actors in it. I don't want to say there's not, but at the same time, I do understand, like, hey, I get to do this. Like, I don't think Tamara Morrison's particularly good in this series, but yeah. I also like kind of appreciate that he was like, hey man, I'm just happy to be here. Like his whole vibe of like, I'm back in Star Wars and this is cool. I like that. It doesn't mean it's a good portrayal, but I do think, like, and the performance isn't good necessarily, but it's hard to, particularly when these actors are, and you could say this is probably why they're doing a bad job, they're wearing their humanity on their sleeves where they're just like, hey man, I'm in a Star Wars. And like, that's still got clap no matter what. That's pretty, I admire that. But at the same time, I'm not supposed to be able to see Tamara Morrison. I'm supposed to be seeing Boba Fett.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's an important point, but you go ahead, Matt, first.
Yeah, just to that point, it's like I had a similar thing about him because I felt like when he was, you know, just sitting on you know, Jabba's throne, you know, saying stuff, it's like, okay, he has kind of a good presence. He has good command. Mm-hmm. I like his voice. But whenever he had to do stuff, I got the feeling, I'm just guessing, seemed like the actor himself was very physically limited.
Yeah.
Where I didn't think I could see him like convincingly like kick someone's butt. And that seemed to be sort of a handicap they were going off of. So yeah, it's just like all this background stuff.
Mm. You know, I think that's actually something that I've been thinking about, which is but that same actor was capable of portraying this pretty well in The Mandalorian season 2.
Yeah.
He had a lot of presence, I felt like, in those scenes. But that's also because they kept his helmet on. Mm-hmm. And they probably had a stunt double doing some of the stuff that he was doing as well. I don't understand what the obsession in this show was with taking his helmet constantly off.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, granted, when he becomes the lead of a show, he was also required to go and do more. I think his limitations of as an actor really did bear themselves also.
Yeah.
And I think that he just wasn't quite up to the task. And you can sense it. There's some of the supposedly more emotional stuff. He does okay with the Tuskens, I thought, but then some of the other parts of the show, the way he was portraying Boba just felt like kind of old and doughy and befuddled.
Yeah.
And you know, some of it I think is on him, admittedly. Although I do appreciate them bringing him back. It's a weird thing. I'm giving him a compliment because I wanted him back if they were going to bring Boba Fett as a character back.
That's exactly the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, and I got that's what you were trying to say. But also, I think, you know, some of it's just the writing. I mean, the writing is what makes him get his ass kicked by pretty much everybody he comes across over the course of the show, right?
Yeah. I wanted to camp out on the writing for a little bit, Mike. What happened? Because Jon Favreau is the guy who's been doing this stuff, And he's right. the guy who saved Star Wars, right? Like, that's what mm-hmm. everyone said. And so that everyone was like, oh, yeah, there's, like, you know, there was all these people who were like, oh, there's big power plays happening where, like, they want to put Favreau in charge of Lucasfilm and Kathleen Kennedy's right. out or whatever. But, like, then this happens, and he's written every episode by himself except for the one he co-wrote with Dave Filoni.
Yep.
What happened?
I mean, if you want my opinion of it is, I think you just explain what the issue was, is that he wrote every single one of these. And I get the sense that he's getting a little stretched thin now. Mm-hmm. And I think the weight of doing all of these things by himself without a writer's room is really becoming to be, a bit of a problem. And as much as I like The Mandalorian, I think the writing has never been really the strongest point.
Sure.
I think that it's like always been kind of a fine line between that was like competently written, but taken over the edge by the top tier production value and mm-hmm. the direction and yeah. like some of the casting and characterization more than the writing itself. And this kind of shows like the opposite side of that line, which is that when the production falls apart, when it's directed incompetently by Robert Rodriguez, we have maybe less than stellar actors doing this stuff. You realize, oh, the writing is not quite up to snuff.
Yeah. No, that's a good point, because like Jon Favreau is never, his strong suit has never been his writing. Like, mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think he's very good at like directing things and spectacle.
Yeah.
Like I really do like that Iron Man movie, the first one, mm-hmm. a lot. I think it's really well paced. I think like as far as like comic book stuff writ large, it's really, I mean, you can't get much better than it, I feel like. Like as far as just like the movie feels like you're reading a comic book, mm-hmm. but it's not like the script isn't good necessarily. But like, yeah, Robert Downey Jr., especially around that time, is so charismatic. And like, it really like mm-hmm. blew the doors yeah. off everything when that happened. Like that was like super new and like inventive, right? When it came out.
Yeah.
And, you know, just seeing the spectacle of it. And like, even though Iron Man was kind of a B-tier character, he did dope stuff in the movie
right.
and it was dope to watch him do dope stuff. And mm-hmm. like, that's what the Mandalorian does a lot of time. He looks dope and does dope stuff.
Yep.
And then mm-hmm. Boba Fett looks like an old man who has a lot of teeth implants. And
yeah, man, those veneers were really noticeable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think something else to note about Iron Man is that a lot of it was being done on the fly and ad-libbed and adjusted and improvised. And with a movie, you know, you have maybe more time to do that and find it in the edit or in reshoots or just over the course of filming versus a TV show where you're like, go, 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 go. And I actually read an interview that's kind of seemed a little defensive featuring Robert Rodriguez, where he's like, oh yeah, I had to do my episodes really quick because of COVID. Like, we weren't sure if we were going to be able to like do all of it before mm-hmm. things got shut down at any given time. And that kind of defensiveness, I think, signals a little bit of insecurity, A. But I do think that maybe there's some truth to it, B, which is that they were really under the gun and they were just kind of throwing this together. And there wasn't a lot of time to find the story or the plot or the character arc or right. anything. That's my suspicion anyway. Matt, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, my thoughts are pretty much along the lines of which you both were saying. To me, Jon Favreau's skill, the thing he's awesome at, mm-hmm. is finding something, some character, some property, figuring out like the essence of why people like it, why yeah. this character works, mm-hmm. and then translating that to the screen. Like, I was watching the movies that made us on Netflix for Elf, and mm-hmm. when you look at it, it's like Jon Favreau.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Saved. Like, Elf would be bad right. if it wasn't for Jon Favreau, and like all the winning stuff were his ideas. And mm-hmm. you can see that in something like The Mandalorian, where he can like, okay, here's this thing, this sort of Mandalorian lone gunman, you know, just like cool character. I can capture that essence.
Yeah.
But for Boba Fett, maybe I like think to be more charitable, he was in a box. Like,
oh yeah,
all those little like things we've been talking about, where he can't do the bounty hunter show because that was the Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. He can't do a real mob boss because it's Disney Plus, so he needs to be a good guy. He can't do this because, you know, the actor's limited. So he wasn't a box, but it's also not quite in his main skill set either.
Yes.
I don't think that this sort of like big sweeping character arc based on months living with the sand people, that's mm-hmm. not really his thing. And you can tell it didn't seem to be in his comfort zone.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And
also, he's not a particularly thoughtful writer.
No. What?
Or contemplative, I
And you
should
know,
say. Contemplative.
yeah, I think that's the good word for it, contemplative.
And you know, the thing about Mandalorian 2, and we haven't discussed this yet, is that it had a really good hook with the idea of Baby Yoda and protecting Baby Yoda. And what this show lacks is a hook. You know, by the end of the first episode, everything's crystallized. Okay, this is what the show is going to be about. By the end of the first episode of Book of Boba, I didn't really understand what it was about yet. I mean, I kind of got like some, but it wasn't a very compelling hook. And I think you could see them kind of fumbling throughout this show to find one. And then it finds a hook eventually in the form of the Mandalorian returning and taking over the damn show. So I kind of want to get on track of that. So we've been kind of down on things, but then I think we would all agree that there's a noticeable uptick in
It's
quality when
so
the
much
Mandalorian
better.
shows up.
It's
Like
so
instantly,
much better.
like within like basically 5 seconds of the Mandalorian episode starting, which is episode 5. It's like immediately a different show, and also like way more brutal all of a sudden. So
Yeah, it's like
they
way
did,
more, it's super violent to open that
yeah,
show
like he goes and like
that
chops a guy in half on a table and stuff like that within 5 minutes. And but then we had the scooter kids just like 2 episodes before doing their bad scooter spy kids chase. So anyway, Matt, let's talk about the Mandalorian. I'll just let you kind of go off on whatever you thought. What did you think about the Mandalorian section of the show?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, I talked about my goals going into these D Disney Plus Star Wars shows. So the instant Mando walks into that like butcher place, and I'm like, Mando, all right, look, frick yeah! And then he goes and he has like that encounter with like the random like low level baddie. He's like, my options: you can leave here warm or cold. And he pulls out the dark saber. I'm like, yes, I am all in. You have me. Yes. So, and then just seeing his continuation, I think that just the whole concept of like this weird like Mando religion, he's in like a weird sect, it turns out, but he really like, I thought that interplay was actually really interesting. And I thought his decision to go back to Tatooine, where it's basically his motivation is, I've been kicked out of the, you know, this last group of my religion, I may as well go someplace and die with honor. That actually kind of worked for me. And basically every scene that Mando or Baby Yoda were in, I was like, all right, this works. Which, again, Boba Fett becomes great when it becomes a different show.
MJ, what did you think of that first Mandalorian episode? We can get
I
into like the
give,
Luke stuff later.
yeah, I want to give special shout out to Bryce Dallas Howard for that episode. She directed the hell out of that episode. I think it's some of the best directed Star Wars that we've seen under Disney.
Absolutely.
I
It was beautiful.
it was really, really well done. I would love to see a feature from Bryce Dallas Howard, not necessarily Star Wars, though I wouldn't be mad if they gave her a Star Wars feature. I just like I think she's got some real good chops because she's directed some of the best episodes of Mandalorian too. And yeah, so that like immediately it's like visually it's so much more interesting than anything else that happens on
Well,
that show.
and I'll just say that the part of that's just because you got something other to see than Tatooine for once.
It's the first time off Tatooine for any extended period of time, but also like it's in her genes. Like, you know, you learn a thing or two when your dad's freaking Ron Howard. Like, I mean, this is, you know, this is the guy who made Apollo 13. Like, you should be able to make a space thing look pretty good. But he also made Solo, so though he was restricted on that and like under a much bigger time crunch, I feel like. So that movie was not entirely his fault, but so Bryce Dallas Howard directed the crap out of it. I think the other thing too, like I know we talked about Jon Favreau's writing not being a strong suit, but like it's obvious who he cares about.
Actually, I kind of want to go into that a little bit. Matt, you're a writer, and you know, so am I. We have dabbled in writing stories before. Do you have like favorite characters that you suddenly like write better than other characters that you maybe don't like as much?
I mean, you can tell, like, there's the stuff, like, you know, when you're just writing a book, you're like, oh, I can't wait to get to this scene. Or it's like, oh, I love this character. And other stuff, you feel like you're just sort of trudging through it. It's like you're, say, going through the sandy dunes of a desert planet that we can never get away from. So that's what it seemed to be. Like, it was like we get to Mando, and all of a sudden everyone's in their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. We get Mando, the writers get Mando, and it just all clicks together. And yeah. The switch seemed really stark to me.
Yeah, and like, you know, when you're a writer, I feel like you there's some characters you might care about more, or certain scenes that you care about more, and other ones that you don't, and then you kind of just hope that the audience doesn't notice, like that your writing is good enough that you kind of glide over that, and it goes over most people's heads, even though personally speaking, there's things that you care about and you don't as much, and I definitely sense that it's just this immediate uptick in interest. And that they understood what to do with this character and with this episode in a way that had been totally meandering throughout the previous 5 episodes, even the ones I liked. So anyway, sorry, MJ, keep on going if you want to talk about that aspect of the episode.
Yeah, it's just visually much more interesting. The writing is so much better. The characterization is so much better. I mean, you know, Pedro is just a better actor than Tamara Morrison is. He's so good. In the show, especially like
even as a voice actor, because I'm pretty sure he wasn't behind the mat, or he was just voice recording all of it.
My understanding is that's most of the Mandalorian, actually.
With the exception, I think, of the episodes he physically shows up in.
I mean, his voice work in it is really great, but also married to the excellent like suit acting. Like the dude who's in the suit is really good at, like, his physicality is really great. Like, he's able to communicate, and this was immediate from the beginning of Mandalorian, he's able to communicate so much with just his body language.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like, I almost feel like, at the risk of sounding kind of pretentious, but like, if an actor really wanted to study, like, do a study in movement, they should watch The Mandalorian on mute and just watch how that character reacts to things.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point. I think that, you know, suit acting is an underrated aspect of film. People just go and kind of scoff at, oh, this guy's just a stunt double or whatever. But, you know, we've seen throughout all of filmmaking, you know, Godzilla, the guy in the suit conveys a lot of personality and character. And Matt, I know you like Godzilla. MJ, I know you like Godzilla.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I love Godzilla.
You know, that you know, if you just had some neophyte doing that, it would not be nearly as interesting as having like the guy who's constantly behind this stuff. You know, we all liked Power Rangers when we were younger. There's a power that's communicated with somebody behind a mask that, you know, if you just had some Joe Blow on the street do, would not convey the same amount of power behind it. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, there's a famous story of this is gonna get real kaiju nerdy, and I'm sorry about that. But Matt, maybe you'll join me on this. Are you a Gamera fan?
Oh, I loved the Gamera movie so much when I was in college, and I was like, all right. So now my kids are old enough to watch Godzilla. My 4-year-old loves Godzilla so friggin' much, and I love it. And I can't wait to see what he thinks of Gamera.
So there's this story. So here's how much I love Godzilla. I wrote a paper on kaiju movies for college.
There we go.
So in my research, I found this interview with the guy who wrote the 90s Gamera trilogy, Guardian of the Universe, mm-hmm. Attack of Legion, and Revenge of Iris. Mm-hmm. And he told this story about how he was on set one day, and the guy in the Gamera suit looked at him and was like, so Gamera is supposed to like defeat the bad guy and then look at the kids, because Gamera is like the protector of children, right? And so, man, this is so nerdy. And the guy in the Gamera suit was having a hard time with like the physicality of looking at the children, because he was like, what am I supposed to feel when I look at the children? Like, what emotion am I supposed to convey? And the writer was like, nothing, you're a lizard. Like he basically was like, you don't like they don't matter to you, like you don't have that higher sense of like, you know, like of like caring about them in that way, like you were not an emotionally driven being. And so it's not necessarily indifference that he looks at the children with, but it's not necessarily like you're welcome either. There is it's literally a non-emotional acknowledgement. It's literally just an acknowledgement that there are beings there. And that's what the writer wanted in the script, was like, hey, you're not supposed to know necessarily. And
can I add my own little nerdy kaiju anecdote now too?
So
So the original Godzilla movie, you know, I think it's like 1954. Mm-hmm. This was sort of the first major movie to have like the guy in a suit destroying a model city. And they get the suit. It's gigantic. It's heavy. It's hot. Takes forever to get the actors in. Then they're under the hot stage lights. And even doing those simple movements of destroying these buildings was incredibly difficult because first, they only get one shot at it because that model downtown Tokyo took forever and they can't just make another one. Two, because it's so hot and physically demanding, there's a real threat of the actors passing out after a couple minutes. And that happened a couple times where the actor just like passes out, collapses and destroys half of Tokyo. Like this was an incredibly physically demanding thing. And those actors in the suits did a ton.
Yeah. I have one last thing to talk about with suit acting. And I need to look at
that. Man, this is not on my notes for this episode. This is great.
But like, I want to talk about it because I think it also shows the limitations that Temuera Morrison has, but he has to be in every scene. So there's this, let me find it. I'm stalling for time because I'm having to scroll through their Twitter archives. So Akira Takahata was in like every era of Godzilla movie, including the new ones. And he just died a couple weeks ago, April of 2020, when Godzilla vs. Kong came out, he released an official statement, through the Toho website, which is, Godzilla is now a world-known hero, earning support from many fans like you. I have been with Godzilla since he arrived as a tragic character, forcefully awakened by the hydrogen bomb test. He is not everyone's enemy that should be brutally eliminated by any chemical weapon, but one that should be respected and admired. And I think that's the thing, is when you have even these creature suits like Godzilla, there's a humanity to them because there's a person in the suit. And, you know, that's where bringing it back to Mando, that's where like the Mandalorian shines, is because like, yes, obviously he's much more humanoid than Godzilla, but, it's the same style of acting essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And, that guy who's in the suit, I wish I knew his name. He's so good at doing that. And then you get Temuera Morrison, and he can't do that within the suit anymore, you know, because he did all right in the original trilogy.
Well, in the prequels.
Well, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, right, he did all right in the prequels as, what, Django, right?
Yeah, as Django, right.
Yeah. And so, like, something happened, like, I don't know if it's just age or if he has an underlying health condition or whatever. And it could be, like, it was just too freaking hot in there for a man his age. Because I'm sure that's not a cool suit. And, like,
no.
Know, even if they're not filming in, you know, what is it, Tanzania?
No, yeah, they're like in Mojave, and then like parts of like, you know, just LA and stuff like that. And I think they're doing a lot of filming
during the summer.
During the summer, so yeah, I'm sure it's really hot.
Yeah, so there's that, and like, yeah, it's just so much better to have like a, you know, and not to, we talked about this on our Wrath of Khan episode. Not that having elderly actors is a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination.
No,
but like if they can't do something, don't write a thing for them to do it.
Right. Yeah. I hate to say it because I actually, like we've said before, I like Temuera Morrison. I think he did convey a certain amount of gravitas and other things that he's been in.
Yeah.
But there's a reason why he's never really been a leading man. I think it becomes very apparent. You know, some people like who are gems, diamonds in the rough, who are older actors who kind of get discovered later at the end of their careers, and everyone's like, oh, wait a minute, like, where did this person come from? He's a great actor.
Mark Rylance.
Exactly. I was just thinking about him. And Temuera Morrison's not one of those people, and he can't carry a show. And, you know, I don't know if they realize that at some point, and that's the reason why suddenly you have the Spy Kids get introduced or whatever.
Or just season 3, episode 1 in the middle of the show.
Right, yeah. That's why, I mean, I honestly suspected that they just took an episode, you know, from Mandalorian. They just repurpose the script to go and be like, this show's not compelling enough without somebody else in here. By the way, that is my word of the day, compelling. you know, there's some sort of recognition, I think. And you see the show have almost like a nervous breakdown when it tries to go and introduce Mando. and it succeeds. Like, it got really interesting then.
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly complaining about it. Like, I've seen some people, I mean, I have, my mom complained, like, man, Tamura Mersin must be like really ticked off. Like, that his own show got hijacked. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of see that. Like, I agree.
Hey!
But yeah, kind of, right? like, I mean, you know, when he signed the contract, did he realize that, you know, two episodes were also going to be made without him?
Yeah.
You know, I understand that, but the show did actually benefit and get better, so I can't really complain about
it. Yeah, well, and like, if you really want to take it to like a book, like, books switch character perspectives all the time.
Yeah, I like that idea, actually. I don't mind like an episode, like a chapter in a book switching to a different point of view.
Yeah.
I think the problem is that that point of view character ends up being way more interesting than the one you've been following.
And honestly, I think that's a benefit of television, right? Like, So Star Wars has always been movies. And so in movies, there are certain limitations you have because you have a certain runtime you have to fit into, which is like, you know, roughly 3 hours maximum, right? Like, that's about stretching it right now.
Yeah.
And so just because you have much more time to do that in TV, why not show other characters? And you know, I think that's almost like I think that is a really good use of like the medium of television. It lets you flesh out the universe. It lets you go catch up with other characters, especially if you're going to do this thing that's, you know, maybe a little bit unique to the times we're living in, which is connecting these series across each other. Right? Like, Frasier is a spinoff of Cheers, but you don't need to watch Cheers to watch Frasier, right? But now, like, all the Marvel stuff's connected. All the Star Wars stuff is connected. Hell, Breaking Bad is connected, you know? So to, like, weave these stories where, like, we go and check in with the characters from, you know, The Mandalorian. It's not a terrible idea.
No. Yeah, I think conceptually it's pretty good. And I think some of it would be alleviated if they had just done that thing that I was saying before, which is that if they called it The Mandalorian... The Book of Boba Fett, then you'd probably be way more accepting of the idea of the Mandalorian showing up and kind of hijacking it for a bit.
And I will say something along those lines that I'm a little worried about, because I can feel myself, you know, Baby Yoda comes back in and I'm getting all my like protective instincts or whatever's going on inside all of us when we see Baby Yoda's like, we must, I just have to figure out what happens to this little guy. I'm in, I will follow whatever story. And if I had not watched the Book of Boba Fett, I would have lost out on some really key things for, I know his name is Grogu, I'm calling him Baby Yoda, and the Mandalorian. So now I'm looking ahead to something like Obi-Wan, that series coming out. And, you know, nothing against the character of Obi-Wan, nothing against Ewan McGregor. I'm tired of Tatooine. I don't particularly want to watch it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Maybe they're going to introduce some Baby Yoda stuff, and I have to watch it.
Right. Well, and I think there's a possibility that Baby Yoda does get involved in some way in it. But
Well, they have me, so they know they have me, so whatever.
Oh, I mean, without spoiling too much, there's some leaks out there, and apparently it doesn't all take place on Tatooine. So if that's also a qualm that you have, then I think he gets off world at some point in it. Sorry for ruining that for people who want to take place on Tatooine and are angry at me for saying that.
Be an adult, you'll be fine.
Yeah. You know, I think that you're both kind of raising some interesting questions about this, which is that if someone's watching Mando 2 and they go and jump into Mando Season 3, they're going to be really confused. Because one gets left off with Grogu, Baby Yoda, going off with Luke Skywalker. And then by the beginning of Mando Season 3, he's going to be right back with Mando. And so that's kind of the perfect lead into the Luke episode. And I mean, I'll just lay my cards out. If you've listened to the episode of The Mandalorian, you probably heard MJ and I maybe disagreed a little bit about the nature of the Luke inclusion at the end of that season. I mean, personally, I was on the side of I really liked it, but I also kind of felt like Luke got so gypped by the sequel movies that we needed that as fans as like a catharsis. And I thought it was like a really good way of wrapping up Grogu's character. But Grogu's back and merchandising exists and he's a moneymaker. And I guess the powers that be think that he is best suited with Mando for that purpose rather than spending any more time with Luke. So anyway, I liked the Luke inclusion. I thought the Luke episode itself was pretty good, although I had some problems with the characterization. Then we can get into the deep faking and the voices and all that stuff. But Matt, like, where do you stand, A, on like Luke's inclusion in things, the Luke episode, where they went with it with Grogu? I'm just going to let you kind of take the lead on where to go with it.
Yeah, so the Luke episode, I'm just trying to figure out where they want Luke to be at this particular time in his journey. Because, you know, like the original Star Wars, we get it. He's like the classic, you know, boy from the hero's journey. He's like this farm boy, blah, blah, blah. We get that. And, you know, Luke in The Last Jedi, which, you know, I don't want to open up the whole can of worms, but you can at least conceptualize this character as like world weary, bitter, calloused, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, it's kind of Luke in his prime, you know, like right. He's at the peak of his powers. He's just about to start the Jedi Academy. I'm getting, and they try to portray him as like a sage,
yeah,
you know, kind of a Yoda figure. And I'm not sure if they succeeded at the sage part.
Yeah.
I enjoyed seeing Luke at the end of Mandalorian season 2. Mm-hmm. If for no other reason than it was really fun watching, you know, prime Luke kick some butt. That was cool. But I'm not sure they succeeded entirely at Luke the Sage. It was still, I still enjoyed the episode, but I'm not sure they succeeded at that particular part.
Yeah. MJ, what did you think of that episode?
So with Mando season 2, my thing is I would have been just as mad if it was Han or Leia that showed up. I don't want any legacy characters in my Mandalorian. Mm. So like that was the main problem I had, is I was like, I'm done with these people. Like I don't need to know about them. I want all the side adventures unconnected from that. This is all going on in the background of those other adventures. Like that's my main hang up with him being in this stuff at all. And so, yeah, I mean, but now my hang up is, if we're gonna do Luke on a somewhat regular basis, we gotta recap.
You don't think? Okay. Yeah.
Oh man.
I don't like the deep fake. Like the thing is, like, I don't remember particularly much of the characterization of the character because I was so distracted by the CG and the chopped and screwed ADR Mark Hamill voice that, like, all that was so grating and jarring to me that I don't remember him. Like, I remember him as the sage. I don't remember what he said.
Mentally get past it.
I couldn't mentally get past it. And I actually kind of like the idea of like Luke being like watching Luke as the sort of Jedi Master, because we haven't seen him be the Jedi Master a lot, right? Like,
yeah.
That's a great idea. That's a great hook, maybe for its own show, I would say, or its own like movie series. I think it should be a show. But, you know, just this like this strict adherence to like and you know, I've talked about this with all kinds of characters. Like, I think we should have been recasting Indiana Jones as often as we recast James Bond. And so, you know, and there's way less characterization of Indiana Jones than there is of Luke, and I understand that. But I feel like, you know, if you look at something like Doctor Who, that's been the same character for 60 years now, and they've successfully recast a bunch of times now. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, there's been ebbs and flows with it, but obviously we're not going to recast Luke as often as we're recasting Doctor Who. So I don't know. I just like, it's the CG is so like, it's just not that all of the tech they're using for him is just not there yet for me to get past how kind of gross it looks.
Oh, I mean, I think that like that's a respectable take. You know, I disagree with it. I think that in terms of the visual effect, I think they're getting better all the time. They went and hired some YouTuber deepfake guy who
that's
improved
a good idea.
Upon.
That's
it, well, yeah, they did. They did. They went and hired some guy who like improved the Luke effect from season 2, and he made a YouTube video showing how he did it. And they just straight
that's
up hired him.
That's a really good idea, because people on YouTube are doing shit way beyond. So like,
and you can tell that this episode like took a huge step up from the Mandalorian episode, even. And I think visually he actually looks pretty convincing now. I think maybe where they get let down is they had a making of the Mandalorian season 2 where they talked about how they made his voice, and how they made his voice is they basically deep fake his voice. They go and take like every audio recording of him out there, and they kind of like grind it up in some AI driven thing, and then it figures out a way to kind of like, you know, you write a sentence and then it says it in like a Mark Hamill-esque voice. And I think the illusion maybe breaks a little bit more there because some of the inflection's a little different. It doesn't bother me so much because he's trying to be like this wise, as Matt's saying, like a wise sage-ish kind of Luke, which I think he's supposed to be kind of more dispassionate. So the tone of the AI algorithm voice is actually okay for me for the most part. But if you need him like to for him to emote to any degree, it's gonna break down the voice. Yeah. You know, I don't know if you can like type in tone of voice. And, well, you know, like
I will say, you know, I am approaching this from sort of maybe a unique perspective in that I'm an audio engineer, so my ears are like pretty highly trained. So like to me, it just sounded like Siri. Like the digital artifacting on that voice was so great. It's legitimately one of the worst things I've ever heard. Like it legit like bothered me. Like it hurt my ears.
Yeah, and I understand like having more serious qualms with the audio voice. In terms of the characterization, I'm okay with him maybe being like this Jedi Master that's trying to learn how to be a better Jedi Master. So the fact that he's kind of like struggling with some things, I'm more okay with. But kind of like where it. And I liked the episode as a whole because it was just nice to go and see like a Mark Hamill-esque Luke from like Return of the Jedi kind of trying to fulfill what I thought that a sequel trilogy would go and do, which is him trying to go and teach people and pass on what he learned, because that's kind of what he was commanded to do. And then the sequels failed to do that. And so I thought it was kind of cool to get a glimpse of that. And also, you know, obviously you had the role reversal of him now teaching a baby Yoda after being taught by one. I thought that was like, you know, it, obviously it's on the nose and, you know, you can all see it coming, but it's cool. Like, I just think it's really cool to see that visual of him in a forest.
I mean, it's that George Lucas, like it rhymes thing that he gets shit for, but I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. And you know, I found like the montage of all that kind of stuff in his training to be pretty charming and like, oh man, that's like really sweet. Like, I don't know. I personally, as someone who's just really into that aspect of Star Wars and wanted something better from it, I really enjoyed it. Where it ends up, though, is like he's really concerned about Grogu's attachment, and then he goes and like forces like a choice on a like a baby, like decide to go and train, or I'll give you back to your dad. And then like where it goes in the next episode, which is like he goes and like basically kicks him out of his house and has R2 drop him off in a like gang war zone.
Yeah, was like, deuce, little guy.
Like what? Like it made him look like really callous and bad, like in a character assassinate-y way that like got me pissed off with the sequels.
I think it wasn't maybe as cynical as the sequels were trying to be. I think they, the intent I read into it, though, yeah, you're right, it was bonkers. The intent I read into it was sort of that, like, that old Jedi way of, like, oh, because Anakin didn't adhere so strictly to the laws of the Jedi, he ended up where he ended up. And, like, this is, like, Luke trying to, like, prevent that for Baby Yoda.
Yes.
But
the
amount of deep Star Wars lore knowledge you have to have to connect those dots is a lot. So,
yes.
Well, Go ahead, let's not forget the very practical reason they do this too. I mean, obviously they want to get Baby Yoda back in the show, but also I know I was concerned. A lot of other people are concerned when Baby Yoda went with Luke because they're like, oh no, does that mean
he gets killed
when the temple gets destroyed? So they save Baby Yoda from that. So that's good news at least. But in terms of all the other stuff, I agree with all the other obvious problems. Yeah.
Well, you know, here's the thing, is that when Baby Yoda went off with Luke, and there's a certain segment of people who went and saw that as, oh, maybe like they're going to make a split timeline thing, and then like this is the good timeline where none of the sequels happen, and then Baby Yoda becomes his apprentice.
That's
because
goofy.
Because the books were saying that Kylo is his first apprentice. Well, if Baby Yoda's his first, then that means that the movies didn't happen. But all, you know, all these YouTubers are saying, you know, Kathleen Kennedy's out of her job and all that kind of stuff. Like, just, you know, they all get fueled by it. And so then this is kind of like the nail in the coffin of, no, this is all leading to the sequels.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a certain amount of depression that comes from that. You know, I was not one of those people that thought that they were going to go and retcon the sequels out of existence.
Yeah, there's no way there.
I was hoping. It was an irrational hope, but I was still kind of bummed to see, like, the Naboo stuff coming in and all that.
But I just thought they would hold off longer, you know, with the speculation. And that's where my problem is. I have, like... Do I think the story actually ends better if Grogu just like never really shows up except for the occasional like drop by Mando to say hey every now and then? Yes. But I understand, you know, there's market forces, and then part of the charm of the show is having Mando with Grogu. Although I maintain, I think there could be a good Luke and Grogu show too, but anyways, that ship is now sailed.
Or at the very least, apparently. Split this perspective of the show, of the Mando.
Yeah, right. You can have like a couple arcs where it's like, yeah, they kind of weave in and out and go back to each other. I think that would actually work just fine.
It would work great.
That being said, I knew that Grogu was going to come back with Mando eventually. I just thought it'd be like at the end of season 3.
Yeah.
Or the beginning of season 4.
Yeah.
That you didn't just like cram all of his, you know, supposed training into one episode and then you're like over it.
One episode of not his own show.
Right. And not in an episode that, of a show that some people are now going to skip and be severely confused by. And I find that just like creatively a really catastrophic decision. I think it's like a blow that's self-inflicted, that it's going to take time to reveal itself to being like a really bad move, but it's maybe just beginning to show the cracks of it now.
Yeah, I agree 100%. That's like the point I wanted to make about I like the idea on paper of weaving in, like, if you're calling something the book of whatever, checking in with the other characters. But the way it does it with Mandalorian is there is so much important character stuff that happens for Mando, for Grogu, for Ahsoka, for Luke, all four of those characters, that pushes their arcs forward like so much. And it just doesn't make sense. Like, it would be one thing if we checked in with Mando and it was like, here's what he was up to before he got the call from Boba Fett. That's fine. But like, the specifics of what he was up to, it's so crazy to me that it is so like tantamount to what he is doing in his own show.
Right. And like dealing with the hook of his own show. Yeah, I think that was a bad call. And I mean, also, you just kind of lied over the fact that Luke and Ahsoka now know each other too, which is a huge moment.
Yeah.
I can only imagine now that they're going to do, because Ahsoka is going to have her own show, right?
Right.
That they're going to do an actual proper introduction to them or flashback to go and show that first meeting, because that's huge. For the people who are still with us at this point and don't know this, but like Ahsoka was trained by Anakin. Anakin's Luke's dad. Like, I have a feeling that they would have like some things to discuss. That'd be really interesting to see in their first meeting.
Yeah, that's true. I guess it would be like, we have some stuff to talk about. I didn't even think about that.
Well, and Luke is going to have to tell her like, hey, by the way, like my dad did turn good. Cause the last thing that Ahsoka knew about him is that he actually turned bad.
Mm.
Now, I heard that Hayden Christensen's part of the Ahsoka show.
Is he? I knew he was part of it.
Yes. Gird yourself, Matt. I know. And as a prequel hater, you're not going to like it. He's also in the Obi-Wan show.
I knew that.
As a cast member.
Yeah. Okay. Let the record reflect, because I've said some very harsh things about his character.
Yeah.
I don't hold the man himself responsible. I don't know how anyone can make the stuff about being softer than sand work. So nothing personal against him, but I am dreading any scenes where he comes back.
I think he's going to surprise you. That's what I'm going to bet.
I think it's cool.
Yeah. I like it. But anyway, all this is going to say, these are huge moments that get passed over very quickly or just completely excised from this narrative in the middle of another narrative. And I just think that that's a bad call. I don't mind them like obviously shifting the Mando for a little bit, but to make like character development that's integral to him and other people close to his storyline is a bad move, like structure wise.
Totally.
It just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth, because I agree with you, Matt. You know, there's the higher level analysis of, you know, attachment is bad, and that's what Luke or MJ, you know, like attachment's bad, all that kind of stuff, right? And that's what they're trying to get across in a more charitable way. But it was like kind of done, I think, poorly and somewhat like rushed and callously, and it kind of like has this cherry on top of Grogu just kind of shows up and was like dumped in an X-Wing Uber to like go to Mando.
Yeah. And this, he sends him to an Uber into the middle of a kaiju fight. Like,
right. Like it is really tone deaf. I know they probably didn't want to bust the budget to go and have a Luke CG character involved in this, in the finale, as well as all these other things going on. And he'd probably like really overpower the proceedings if he just kind of like shows up to a war zone with Grogu in hand.
And just like yeets him at, what's her name?
Amy Sedaris's character.
It's like, here you go. What's going on over there? Not my problem. Bye. Yeah.
They're like, maybe that's opening a can of worms that they don't want to deal with. Although I maintain that would have been kind of cool if he'd been involved in the gang fight. But anyway,
it would have been cool if he'd been involved in the gang fight. But I feel like the way that the introduction of Grogu is handled, he would have just been like, oh, weird. That sucks. I'll see you guys later.
Yeah. The way like it ended with that left a bad taste in my mouth. But I mean, since these are all interconnected storylines at this point, who knows? They may be going to pick it up again at some other point.
I feel like especially with like as much as they're trying to develop this de-aging stuff, like it seems like they have big plans with like maybe not Luke or even like Leia or Han, but like just this idea of like no one ever truly dies. Like in general, just any whoever they want to bring back, right? Like.
Yeah.
Which grosses me out, but that's a different conversation.
The only thing I was going to say, I feel like I'm taking over this conversation about some of this de-aging stuff, is I kind of commend in one way, I get the creepiness of it, but I kind of like how they're trying to tell almost like a coherent story across 40, 50 years of a media project. And like that they're trying to maybe almost make it a way where you could watch this entire thing from episode one all the way until the newest stuff. And for the most part where they could, they tried to keep the actors or now de-age them to make it like this weird continuity between everything. I think it's like kind of admirable in some ways. Obviously it's a power that can be used for ill, and that's my fear with Hollywood in the future.
I'm probably right there with you because what's the earliest use of this, right? Tron Legacy. I think it's a great idea in Tron Legacy, especially in something where it's like it's such a great idea to have it in Tron Legacy. Here's my Tron Legacy hot take. to have it in something like Tron Legacy where like that is a computer simulation facsimile of the legacy.
Yes, so he can be kind of off.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to like deploy it, but then like how they've weaponized it ever since.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, I agree with you. I do think it is admirable to like keep the same actors for the most part, at the very least doing mocap for them like they did with Luke at the end of Mando season 2. And even like the same voice for the most part, but just like the way it could potentially be used really skeeves me out.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with you. It's concerning. And you know how you were saying, you don't know if they're going to use it necessarily for Leia or Han, but other things in the future. I mean, I'm pretty sure that they've said before that all these Mando related shows are going to culminate in some big event. And, you know, they're building up the Thrawn character that we've talked about before. They're going to be Rebels and Mandalorians and other people banding together to go and fight the Imperials led by Thrawn. And I guarantee you Leia's going to show up. She's going to be leader of the Rebels. Just like gird yourself, prepare yourself now for all of this.
Well, and they've done it before, right? Like they did it. I mean, she was still alive when Rogue One came out. But
right.
There has been a CGI Leia.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So it's coming. You know, I think the only way to defend it is that these characters are significant people in this universe. So it makes sense that I think they'd be involved in some like earth shattering events. You know, I think when it comes to Jedi, it makes sense that Luke is involved. You know, if there's going to be some big threat, it's probably gonna make sense that the Rebels who are led by a particular character gets involved. But there's a point where you can get a little too much wink, wink, nudge, nudge fan service-y.
And at a certain point, like, I feel like, I don't know. I think this is maybe like an American audience thing. Like, if we get to that point with them, I feel like if you slap some makeup on a couple people, like I would be me specifically, I would be fine with it.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. I think regardless, there is going to be a point, I think, when George Lucas passes away and some of these other actors have passed away, that we will get a full reboot of Star Wars.
You think so? Like, ground up?
I think so. I mean, and I'm going to try to get Matt back in the conversation, but, you know, because maybe we can get into both the ending of this show, but also the future of these shows. I think it's a big ask for little kids today to go and watch a movie from 1977 and then be like, this is the gateway, and now here's, you have to watch this in order to understand everything else. I think there is a, we're approaching a moment where, as much as I like the original Star Wars, it is getting a little bit harder and creakier to watch. And I think they're going to be tempted to go and remake that. And then I don't know how they're going to remake some of their stuff. You know, how are you going to remake some of the divisive movies? I don't know. Good luck to you. You know, are you going to like totally adapt the prequels? Are you going to totally adapt the sequels? Or are you going to make more significant changes there? It'll be an interesting question, but I do think that day is coming, and it'll probably happen like within 10 to 15 years. But that's just my take. I don't know, Matt, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I will say my knee-jerk reaction is like, well, of course, you know, kids coming up will love the original Star Wars because the original Star Wars are awesome.
Mm-hmm,
but,
right.
Of course, that's colored by me, you know, loving Star Wars since I was a kid. But, you know, even, you know, when I watched them as a kid, they're already a little creaky and outdated, you know. So mm-hmm. I do think kids coming to it will still find that compelling. But the question is, how will they enter the rest of the world? So I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. My oldest is in kindergarten, and we haven't shown him really Star Wars yet, but mainly because I want him to be old enough to get it when the Luke, I am your father line comes out, so I can tape it and post it on Instagram, be that dad.
Yeah.
Okay. But, yeah. So he's never seen them, but he's already heard of Baby Yoda. So he's like, come back from school, like, Dad, I like Baby Yoda. He's cool. So it's like, okay, so do I try to show him some Mandalorian stuff? Will that make sense? And then there's all this other stuff that, like, you know, because I'm a grumpy old man about the prequels, I'd love to hide their existence from my kids, but they're going to like them because I liked them when I was a kid and didn't know better. And there's just all this stuff now. And I don't know. It's probably not I'm sure it's not a bad thing because a lot of this stuff is good. There's, you know, there's Star Wars video games that are really good, right? There's just a lot of ways to open up this world, but it's not as straightforward anymore. It goes beyond, whether you watch the Star Wars starting with, you know, A New Hope or A Phantom Menace. There's just so many aspects to this world.
Yeah, there's a lot of entry points now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think about this a lot. This is maybe going to get a lot broader and a lot deeper than you intended the question to be, Mike, and I apologize
it's all
for
good.
That. But I think about this stuff a lot. I came up, my parents were a lot older to be having kids. My dad was 40 and my mom was 38 when she had me. And so as a result, like, if you think about that, when I was born, that means my parents were born, like, basically right after World War II. Mm. And that means they came of age in, like, TV was barely a thing. Like, my dad was born before TV. And my mom was born when TV came out, basically. So I grew up watching a lot of old stuff. I grew up watching a lot of old Twilight Zone. I grew up watching a lot of old sitcoms. I grew up watching The Honeymooners. You know, I grew up watching these old Godzilla movies. I grew up watching Three Stooges with my dad. We would go to Video City and rent Three Stooges movies when I was like four. So you always like get brought up with what your parents got brought up with.
Yeah.
So I don't have kids yet, but I have thought about this a lot. I think the other thing too, I'm, you know, in the moments when I am in college, I am a film and media studies major. And like, there is such a breadth of, you know, history beyond even Star Wars, beyond even, you know, people look at the 70s as like this golden age of cinema. And it is, it's definitely my favorite decade. But like, there's great stuff from the 20s on, you know, like, I feel like denying a child the idea of, you know, even watching Chaplin and Keaton and these silent things, I can't get behind it, right? Like, there's this idea of, like, you know, a lot of people nowadays have this idea that, like, black and white movies are boring.
Yeah.
And they're not. Like, go watch The Gold Rush. That movie's incredible. It's so good. Go watch The General. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's really important for me when we do have kids to like make sure that they are not averse to something like Three Stooges or, you know, maybe not modern times, that's a little esoteric, but like The Kid, such a good Charlie Chaplin movie that I think any kid, if they see it at the right age, would totally relate to. So it's so important. Like, I think about that maybe more than I should, as far as like when it comes to like stuff parents should worry about. But yeah, I think a lot about like how I'm going to raise my kids as far as like media consumption goes and how to make them like responsible consumers of media when they're surrounded by it. And, you know, more than likely going to be in a public school system where they're going to come back with Baby Yoda or whatever before they even know who Luke Skywalker is.
Right. Yeah. And to that point, like I have absolutely seen that already. And I'm sorry, Mike, I'm going to bring Godzilla in again briefly.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead.
So, you know, a few months ago, my 4-year-old he's up late sick. So I'm sort of staying up late with him. And we start watching the original Godzilla movie. So 1954, black and white. Japanese subtitles, Godzilla. And I'm thinking, is he going to be able to handle this? Because, you know, the pacing's slower. It's a little bit, you know, more brooding. He was locked in the whole time. Like, he freaking loved it. And he watched the entire thing and he was interested. Like, I think when we give kids, you know, like show them the confidence, a lot of times they will rise to the occasion. I think it's good that, you know, my 4-year-old now has a temper where he can handle a 1954 movie. And I think that's just a good thing in general for kids.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, even to make it, you know, maybe a little bit more relevant if people aren't diehard Godzilla fans, which I don't know why you wouldn't be, but whatever. That's what Jurassic Park, right? Movie's 30 years old next year. Movie's 30 years old next year.
Wow.
and like, and people talk about how it's like too scary for kids and maybe watching it as an adult, I kind of agree, but I also saw the movie when I was 5 and I freaking loved it.
Yep.
You know, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. And like, I think showing a kid that young, I mean, my hot take is like, if a kid sees something too scary, too young, it builds character, but whatever. Once again, a different conversation. But you know, I think there's a difference between also like showing your kid Jurassic Park and showing them The Exorcist when they're 4. You know, and for me, I've talked about on the show before, my experience with Jurassic Park, it was never scary to me because I was so into dinosaurs and like had so many dinosaur toys as a 4-year-old that I would then make eat my action figures that were humanoid that in Jurassic Park, when they got eaten as people, I was like, yeah, I get it. That's what dinosaurs do. I make the dinosaurs that I own do that to the people that I own. So why would they not do that in the movie? And then when I revisited Jurassic Park as a 16-year-old, I was like, how the hell did I see this as a 4-year-old?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that like kids process scary stuff different than adults. When you're an adult, like, you understand the weight of death differently than when you're a kid, like in general. Yeah, maybe I should clarify some things. Personally speaking, I hope to go and introduce my children someday to, you know, older movies and have them have an appreciation for it. I think we're all, you know, people who try to be thoughtful about media and what our kids consume and like what the classics are. But I can see some exec out there being like, hey, that 1977 movie, kids aren't going to go out of their way to see this. We need to remake it. You know, that's going to be more accessible. Kids today are, they watch like movies that are edited, you know, every 2 seconds there's a new cut in a shot and there's way too many, you know, there's way too long establishing shots in these old movies or blah, blah, blah. You know, they go down this track of thinking where it's like, they don't think the best of people and children or whatever. And that's the reason why I think that eventually we're going to go and get reboots. Not because like, I personally think that kids can't stand it. I think it's because an executive is going to be like, hey, we don't trust kids to go and watch this. And in fairness, you know, you have to go and kind of seek something out that's old. It's harder to, I mean, Star Wars is so present that's kind of hard.
Star Wars is so, this. Yeah, but yeah.
But you know, like, I go and flip through cable channels, and, you know, let's say you watch FX or something, right? There's, like, only movies from the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
It's very rare that, like, any cable channel besides, like, TCM has anything older than, like, 10 years old.
Go look up, go search Charlie Chaplin on Netflix and tell me what you find. It's nothing, by the way.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're getting pretty far afield, I guess, but I think that all to go and say that, I think we're moving in like such a disposable culture right now that things don't have a lot of staying power. I mean, obviously Star Wars is something that has withstood that, but you know, I question how long that can last when the quality of their stuff, recent stuff, has not been always up to par. And so maybe we can transition to like the last parts of this. Matt, like, where did you think things ended up, like, as the show? We obviously talked about the first couple episodes. We talked about the Mandalorian section of it, and then like, here we are, like, at the ending. Did the finale, like, leave you satisfied? A. B, do you want to see more adventures in the Book of Boba? Or are you like, I've had my fill?
You know, I'm doing good with Boba wise. You know, I mean, if we want to do like the young Boba Fett at some point, you could talk me into it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, really, I'm still in on Mando and Baby Yoda,
mm-hmm.
and I will have kind of a tough time getting into Obi-Wan or any of these other new ones because I just feel like they just crank them out so fast. Like this happened to me with Marvel, where I watched WandaVision. I really enjoyed it, and you know, after I finished the last episode, have a sense of like, you know, accomplishment. They're like, "Oh, you need to watch Falcon and Winter Soldier." It's like, mm-hmm. "No, that's enough for now." And I just wonder if that's going to happen with Star Wars, and if they're going to keep intertwining the stories I am really invested in with some of these I may not be. That's kind of a tricky situation for me.
Yeah, that's always the danger, I think. MJ, what's your take on it?
No, I mean, I'm in the exact same boat, Matt. I think especially, you know, I mentioned I'm a film and media studies major, so I love movies and media in general. So, like, I'm trying to consume as much as possible, but I want everything, you know? I don't want to, like, camp out on just Star Wars. I don't want to camp out on just Marvel. So, like, this idea of, like, having to keep up, juggle these, you know, spin these plates of these two in particular franchises, it's exhausting for me. I mean, I really fell off with the Marvel stuff during the pandemic. Basically, like, I, you know, once they started doing shows, it was really hard to keep up. Is there a show I missed, by the way, when I said WandaVision, Captain, Falcon and Winter Loki. Soldier, Loki? Was there a fourth one? There was What If. Was there another one that they did last year or no?
I think
may have been. So. I really fell off the boat after WandaVision. I felt like that exhausted all my reserves. Yeah. I enjoyed it. That's all I can do for a while.
I mean, now they got Moon Knight.
Yeah, I know Moon Knight's out right now, and that's airing currently. I feel like there was another Marvel show, but I don't remember.
There's the What if you're counting that.
Yeah, I mentioned that as well. Marvel TV shows. Here's the problem already, by the way.
See, right, you know, we just demonstrated. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, at the end of the year. Oh shit! Yep. See,
I didn't watch Hawkeye, but and like I also fell off with the movies. The only movie I saw, the only Marvel movie I saw in a theater last year was The Many Spider-Men, and that was because Kristen's mom wanted to see it over Christmas. I had no intention really of seeing it, and I honestly like made a point the 2 days before to go see Licorice Pizza and West Side Story to support those movies. As well. And then it took actually until the last time my wife went out of town, she's out of town currently when we're recording this, for me to catch up on everything else on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the nature of how I'm going to consume this stuff from now on is I'll wait for most of it to hit Disney Plus. I'll see the stuff I'm interested in and I'll wait for most of it to hit Disney Plus. And that's the extent of it. And so to bring it back to Boba Fett and Star Wars, I'm good on Boba for now, though the idea of a Boba Fett Origins is maybe not a terrible idea to sort of fill in the gaps between what the Revenge of the Sith and Empire Strikes Back. I think that's actually a pretty good idea. I hadn't even considered that until you brought it up, Matt. but yeah, I'll keep up with Mando probably until it gets terrible, which statistically, based on the way I watch TV, about season 3. but I'm just not a good TV watcher in general. Like, the more we serialize this stuff, I mean, Breaking Bad is my favorite show of all time. I haven't seen a second of Better Call Saul, and that's arguably better from what I've heard. I just am a bad TV watcher. I love watching movies, and the movies I want to watch, it's not necessarily that my tastes have changed. It's just that it's so oversaturated that, like, I want to watch everything. Like, right now, at time of recording, I want to go see Everything Everywhere All at Once. I think it looks like a cool movie. Like, that's going to get me in a theater faster than something Marvel, except Doctor Strange, because it's directed by Sam Raimi, who I love. And, like, you know, it's hard for me. I don't know necessarily. Like, I'm probably going to see all the new Star Wars stuff as it comes out, movie-wise, but they make that stuff way less frequently than they make the Marvel stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just it's hard for me to say right now, especially as not someone who has devoted their entire like attention to one franchise necessarily. Like Star Wars was and always will be a huge part of why I do what I do and why this podcast exists and why I love movies as much as I do. And it's not that I've outgrown it necessarily. You know, I can still watch and enjoy a bunch of the stuff. I loved Rogue One. But it's just that, like, there's Star Wars was a launch pad for me. It wasn't where I wanted to live.
Yeah. I guess I'll just follow up on that point. I mean, Star Wars used to be something I really, really care about. And then maybe people have different points where things break for them, but the sequels were definitely the point where I was like, I'm like off the train where I'll just like watch anything or like, I won't base my personality in this thing or obsess about it. I'll watch what's good and then I'll criticize what's bad. And also like, because they did them so badly and they set the universe so badly to the point where I can't really conceive of them going in the directions that I think that they should have gone in that would have expanded the universe, and they've only really limited it since then. It's really hard for me to get like totally invested in anything they ever do again. That being said, you know, the ones that are good, like Mando or Rogue One or whatever, I'll still, you know, watch and think are good. But you know, I don't need to see any more Boba, for example, unless they did something where you guys are talking about. Yeah, the prequel series of what I think that this one should have been or should have had elements of within it would have been nice. But, you know, now that moment has passed. But I would be down for him to go and show up in Mando again. You know, I think that'd be welcome. You know, I wouldn't mind checking in on some of this stuff for an episode. I just don't want to be the basis of an entire season again.
Sorry, not to interrupt. I want to say, like, I think this is arguably, for my money, the worst of the Disney stuff. And the reason I would say that is because it's just so boring. Like, you know, Rise of Skywalker was bad. It's definitely the worst, but it was so bad that it elicited a reaction. And, you know, Last Jedi was so divisive that it elicited reactions. Boba Fett was just like, that's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different kind of mediocre or bad, which sometimes to some people can actually be worse than something that's actually bad. And I will say, just to kind of go off that point a little bit more, I think that this show presented an interesting opportunity to kind of expand the universe of Star Wars beyond just it's a Western in space or it's good guys like Rebels versus Empire in space. This was something that where they could have tackled a different genre and then shown like a different way or different course for Star Wars to go to tackle different genres. And they bungled it so bad that I don't know if they can do it right again, that's kind of thing. And like the same with the sequels, they didn't have to go and make it about Rebels versus Empire. They could have done literally anything else. They could have done something where it was about like the Jedi Luce Academy and like all this kind of stuff. And they could have made it like Hogwarts in space. Which would have made them a lot of money, and then they deferred doing that for whatever reason. They could have done more things, and then they blew up the Republic, which would have like presented a lot of story opportunities. And they didn't, and so they limited the scope of Star Wars to be basically this narrowly defined thing of Western in space or Samurai in space, and that's about it. And that's the reason why like it's hard for me to get like interested in anything they'd ever do again, because it's just gotten so limited in what it can do right. And then every time they try to do something outside that box, they suck at it really bad. And I mean, maybe they'll do maybe they'll eventually hit something right. But I have to have like no confidence in them to do that. And then one last thing, you know, despite all that, I'll watch, you know, whatever shows that they have for as long as they're good. You know, I think that this Obi-Wan thing, for example, is something that they always should have done. They got Ewan McGregor. He's the right age to go and play, you know, a middle-aged Obi-Wan. It honestly took them way too long to get to this point. I mean, it could have been a movie too. It should have been the first series they did, you know, especially if they're going to have it take place on Tatooine rather than blow everyone's, you know, patience on Tatooine with Boba Fett. I wish they'd wasted our patience.
You know
what?
I will say, I don't think people would have gotten so uptight about Tatooine if the show would have been good.
That's true.
I think it was one of those things where the show was so boring and bland that like people were like, you start actively looking at stuff. It was like, we were talking about off mic, like look at this bitch eating crackers.
Right. It's like everything everything about it begins to annoy you, yeah. Even the setting. And so, yeah, I do agree. It's like, that's kind of an escape. It's not an scapegoat, a scapegoat, for the problems of this show. But you know, I think that like that, the Obi-Wan show is kind of the only show or spinoff or solo story I really wanted out of them. And so they're doing that. I mean, hopefully it's good, because I think, I don't know, there's some warning signs in that teaser trailer, to be honest, but
yeah, there
we'll talk
are.
About that later. But anyway, this is just one other thing, which is that you're talking about like there's maybe too many of these things, there's too many of these Marvels, and I think they're almost committing the same mistake with these TV shows with Star Wars that they did with the movies, which is that they wanted to have a movie every year, and right. That's like an ultimate betrayal of Star Wars to me, because Star Wars was something that was special. It was an event. And each time that they go and make like four shows in a single year, you're reducing the specialness of that thing. Granted, you know, if they're all good, then the specialness is retained, but the batting average is not like, is not always on the side of believing that's going to be the case. So I think that they could run into the same problem what they did with the movies, was that the movies needed to take a break. They decided to go and stop making the movies because of the quality issues, and they thought that it was Star Wars fatigue. Well, what makes them think that that's not going to happen with these TV shows? If some of them, if they end up being like scattershot in quality, they're going to be in the same position with these. So I guess we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah. I think that's as good a place as any to end it. Matt, once again, the Anselm Society, you want to give the links once again of where to go, links and socials?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, my podcast is Believe to See, and that's done with the Anselm Society. So if you want to find out more about us, visit us at anselmsociety.org. And you can also find links to podcasts, other events, especially if you're in the Colorado area. But even if you're not, we have plenty of other material there that is worth checking out.
Cool. Mike, do you have anything to plug?
Yeah, so I released an audiobook. It's for my second book, The Ashen Prophecy, which I wrote as a standalone book, so you can jump in with that. I think the narrator of the book, he's a UK radio host, Graham Mack, did a fantastic job. He really captures the qualities of the characters, and his narration is fantastic. It'll last you 20 hours, so depending on where you live, that could last you 20 different commutes or 40 different commutes, so come on. It you get your money's worth out of it. But you know, that's on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. I hope you go and check it out. And also, Matt, thank you for showing up. I appreciate it.
Yes,
oh,
thank
absolutely.
You
thanks. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
For me, Let's Draws for a minute. It's my other podcast. We're almost at the end of Jaws. So if you don't know what it is, it was sort of this weird project that was born out of the pandemic boredom, where me and my friend Sarah, who is also based in the UK, each week we watch 1 minute roughly of Jaws and then talk about it for an hour to an hour and a half. And most people are like, oh yeah, so it's like 90% like screwing around. No, it's like, it's analysis for most of it. It's really in-depth, fine-toothed comb analysis of my favorite film of all time. And yeah, we're almost at the end. We have, by the time you're listening to this probably, we have like 4 or 5 episodes left. And that's really weird to me. That is not the end of Let's Jaws for a Minute. If you want to know what's next for the show, tune into episode 80. All will be revealed. But yeah, we're almost done with Jaws. Episode 79, which will be out at the end of April, 2022, is it for us talking about the film. It's kind of got me in a weird headspace every time I have to talk about it. So, yeah, you
and
can so check that
it's,
out.
It's a really good time to go and just kind of binge through it now that you're almost done.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, 80 hours of content that you can get for free, because I'm an idiot that didn't charge for this, like that didn't put it behind a Patreon or something. And you can find that wherever pods are casted. It's on every major place. So is this show, obviously you're probably listening to it. For real perspective, my goal for this year, and I think our goal for this year, is to put out more content more regularly. It's been a weird couple years, just with pandemic stuff, but the movies are back, baby. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, expect more from us. Expect more film content. That's where I like to live, is in that stuff. So I don't know necessarily what our next episode will be. Oh, it'll probably be Batman, right? Hitting HBO Max soon. So we'll try to strike while the iron is hot on that. While the bat signal is hot on that. yeah. Other than that, we will talk to you next time. So until then, Boba Fett's the bad guy with a heart of gold.